AFA Action takes attacks on the family seriously. The enemies of the family constantly employ new tactics to try to sneak past our radar. They know if we stand together, their evil plans will fail. Your gift to AFA Action allows us to stay vigilant against their onslaught. And if you give this month, you'll receive access to the Cultural Institute video, When Your Faith is Illegal, by Frank Harbor on AFA Stream as our thanks. You can make your gift today at afaaction.net.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks for listening to AFR on this Tuesday, December the 2nd, 2025. And studio with me today is Wesley Wildman. Good morning, Wesley.
Good morning.
And Chris Woodward.
Good morning.
And joining us from sunny Florida, I guess it's sunny today.
Yeah, Tim.
Ray Pritchard.
Yeah, it's, I hate to say this.
I'm sure you do.
Yeah. It's only 77 degrees here in Hudson, Florida this morning. And back in Kansas City, where we normally usually live, it's 19 degrees with about 6 inches of snow on the ground.
Now, you and Marlene decided to become snowbirds for the first time this year, right?
That's right.
So I remember how excited you were to share that news with us, and
I'm still excited.
Still excited. And so, what you're going to live 6 months in Florida, 6 months in KC?
Right now, maybe 5 months down here in Florida, and then in April back to Kansas City.
Yeah,
as that's the plan right now, anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. That's like being a somebody once told me that. They were a Alabama football fan and a Kentucky basketball fan. And I said,
nah, it didn't work that way.
That's not right.
You can't do that. So
and that was during their prime. That's when
Kentucky was winning championships every year. So Ray's Florida in the winter and Kansas City in the springtime.
This summer.
I have a question.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
So you're from Kansas City, a part of the country that's known for its barbecue.
That's right.
Have you found anywhere in Florida, the great free state of Florida, with some good barbecue?
We did go to a barbecue place here, and it made me miss Kansas City. It wasn't awful, right? It's not awful, Chris. It was good, but it did make me miss Joe's barbecue.
I think, Chris, the main thing is the type of animal that you barbecue.
That's true.
Here and in Kansas City, it would be like cow, maybe, or
yeah.
That's right.
Maybe pork, but you go to Central Florida where Ray is.
Iguanas.
Alligators.
That's right, alligators.
Alligator is good. That's a tasty.
I do enjoy alligator.
What is it?
It's like the texture of steak, but it looks like chicken, but it's the texture of steak.
Yeah, I've never had it in any other way than alligator bites, which is like little bitty nuggets, like shrimp bites,
yeah,
that size. So I don't know if it's cooked any other way, if I'd like it the same way, but the gator bites are really good.
There are certain, maybe it's just the way you grow up and what your mind is accustomed
to.
There's just certain animals
we got to draw a line somewhere.
My soul rejects, you know? I just
on spiritual grounds.
I can't eat an alligator.
Yes.
I know it's probably maybe tasty.
I know what you're saying.
But it's when it goes in my mouth and I'm thinking, do you understand what you're putting in your mouth?
Sure, an alligator.
I say that about an alligator chitlins in your mouth.
Look, I see these TV shows of, you know, the rattlesnake poacher or rattlesnake catchers down in Texas.
Yeah,
and people eat rattlesnake.
Yeah, they do.
Meat.
Yeah, that's right. They do.
That is beyond me. That's far beyond me.
I don't. The Bible doesn't speak to that, does it, Ray?
Not that I know of.
It's in an obscure verse in Leviticus somewhere.
Hey, Ray, we were talking yesterday during the program. We're in December now. And I know that you have in the past you had a booklet, right?
Right.
For Christmas, leading up to Christmas.
Right, an Advent devotional,
Advent devotional. Are we in that season now?
We are in that season.
Okay.
And I did, the one last year was Advent from the Gospel of Luke, and the one this year is called Behold the Lamb, Advent from the Gospel of John, which is, it's so different. It's, John is deep, but you know, if you're looking for the angels and the shepherds, you got to go to Luke. If you're looking for the wise men and Herod and the star from the east, you got to go to Matthew. But if you want to know Christmas before Bethlehem, what was it like going all the way back into eternity? What was God's plan from the beginning? Read the Gospel of John. It's profound. It's deep. And today, Tim, we did John 1:5. The light shines in the world, and the darkness cannot overcome it. I find it's one of the most encouraging verses in all the Bible, because the light is shining. The darkness hates the light. It attacks it, but it cannot overcome it. Just two quick things here. Number one, Isaiah says the people who walk in darkness have seen a great light. There's the problem. There's the solution. What's the problem of the world today? Not just darkness, but deep darkness, deep moral and spiritual, intellectual darkness. The darkness is around us, and the darkness is getting darker all the time. And into that deep darkness, a bright light from heaven started shining in Bethlehem. It is still shining today. So let me just give this word of encouragement to all of our AFR friends. Sometimes you look around and feels, do you ever feel like the bad guys are winning? Sometimes I think even the stories we do here on TI, I feel like the bad guys are winning. Mm-hmm. And I think God says, scoreboard, scoreboard. You don't look at the scoreboard in the middle of the third quarter. What you need to do is look at it at the end of the game. And God in the book of Revelation put the scoreboard up. Jesus wins. He wins big, and he's completely undefeated. Be encouraged, friends. Shine your light in the darkness around you, because Jesus Christ has come. He is the light of the world. The darkness cannot overcome it. So, Tim, that's the best news I've got here on this Tuesday.
Amen. Well, and in the Bible, Jesus Christ is called, goes by several different names, but one of them is the light of the world, right?
That's exactly right. In fact, John 8 says, Jesus said, I am the light of the world. But remember what he said. In Matthew 5. He said to us, you, my disciples, my followers, you are the light of the world. So as we follow Jesus, his light comes into us. We walk into the darkness around us, and we shine the light of Jesus, and the darkness cannot overcome it. It's just tremendous good news, which is why Christmas is a time not just of carols and music. It's a time of bright lights, because the light started shining in Bethlehem. It's still shining today.
Amen.
Also, in the New Testament, it says that the perfect love of Jesus cast out fear, and also living in light of eternity. So with the Christian, as we grow in our faith, we continue to grow with eternal mindset, meaning that we know, as Ray mentioned, we know the scoreboard, but also too, it gives us confidence and encouragement during the dark times to continue to press forward, knowing that our eternal soul is rested in heaven.
Amen.
But again, just for a moment, there's a counter to that too. If there's a destination for those that have put their faith in Christ and repented of their sins, there's also a destination for those that haven't. And knowing both destinations and studying them both really makes one, it really polarizes the difference between the two. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, here on AFR, we encourage those that there's people that have been listening, I'm sure, for years and really enjoy our content, and they're, you know, very conservative and very active, but maybe they have not found the need yet to put their faith and their trust in Jesus. And as it says in the Gospels, there's no other route to heaven except for through Jesus. And so
Amen. We
encourage people to repent of their sins and trust the Lord Savior, Jesus Christ, and live in light of eternity.
Amen. Absolutely. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. And at the bottom of the hour, Jenna Ellis will be with us. And we got a lot of topics to talk about with Jenna. So we look forward to that conversation. Chris, what's your first news story today?
Well, Ray and his wife may not be the only people that are thinking about moving to warmer weather. I say that because in Chicago, which obviously is a place known for cold weather, they're in the news because Chicago faces its worst start to winter in nearly 150 years, mm-hmm. according to a weather blogger by the name of Ryan Mao. Chicago is looking at temperatures potentially dropping to negative 14 degrees Fahrenheit in the coming days. This is all due to what's being described as a polar vortex. This blogger, Ryan Mao, posted on X, if you continue stretching the polar vortex, eventually it will let loose obscenely cold air. By next weekend and the following week, the bottom drops out completely with coldest early December temperatures since 1876 in Chicago.
Well,
it's not going to touch Florida, though, is it?
Come to Florida, friends. Come
I know, right? Where is Al Gore when you need him?
Right.
That's right.
I mean, we need Al Gore right now.
We need
more than ever. We need some global warming, and sure he's just, you know, we seem to be going the opposite direction.
Yes.
This is the
we need more destruction.
I counted on. I counted on global warming. And here we are going the wrong way. In all seriousness, of course, nobody controls the weather, right?
Except for God.
God. Mm-hmm. God sets nature in motion, and we're going to get some deep theological area here. I don't think God controls God does control planet Earth.
Sure.
But God doesn't. God doesn't stop nature from taking its course, and he's the creator of nature. And this polar vortex that they're talking about, if it were warm weather, if we were having the most warm weather we've had in 100 and whatever years, 50 years in Chicago, you better bet we would be hearing, see here?
Oh, yeah.
This is proof of man-made global warming. Mm-hmm. But when we have freezing your rear end off in the 1st of December, they switch over to, well, it's just a polar vortex coming down.
Yeah.
That's not global cooling.
That's not global cooling.
Yeah.
It's just a polar vortex that we're having to deal with. But it is, listen, in all seriousness, Ray, the cold is causing a lot of, and ice and snow. I mean, I know our friends up north are used to it, but not starting into, even in Chicago.
They're used to it in January.
Yeah.
Right. But not this early in December.
Yeah.
And Chris, does this mean we're going to have an extremely cold January and February?
I've not seen that in terms of like our neck of the woods. But you know
about these things, Chris?
It's hard to dig that far out, too.
While I did graduate from a university well known for meteorology, I'm not a meteorologist. You could probably Google it and find some different answers. Generally, what I'm concerned about when you see cold like this and then you see warm weather somewhere else, that spells bad news for us because we're always prone to a tornado.
I tell you what I'm concerned about with cold weather, and if it dips any further south,
we're going to miss it.
Well, it's my attitude.
I'm not a fan of this weather.
It's vexed my personality.
Yes.
And I
don't like being cold at night when I sleep.
I tell you what we need to do, fellas. You need to check out the Farmer's Almanac. That's always been
that's right. It's the source of all truth there.
Farmer's Almanac will tell you what's going to happen. So you're listening to today's issues. Are you checking out the Farmer's Almanac?
I sure am.
What is it?
All right. So Google says the Farmer's Almanac forecast a wild ride for winter 2025 and 2026, predicting a cycle of cold snow and repeat for most of the country, particularly in the northern plains and New England. The old-fashioned winter may not be as brutally cold as the previous year, but it's still going to be significantly cold, possibly lasting until April.
That just happens every year.
Right.
How did they get away with winter up north, right?
Yeah.
People buy that.
Sure do.
Yeah. It's called weather.
That's just, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's called seasons. Four seasons.
I have a prediction. If the Lord tarries, the sun will come out tomorrow and rise to the east.
So says the.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
That's right.
All right, next story.
All right. Let's mention this real quick because there has been some concerns about President Trump's health due to the fact that he is approaching 80. The president is currently 79 years old, and in recent days, the president has had at least one MRI, maybe a few MRIs done, to look for things. News reporters found out about this, asked Caroline Leavitt about it yesterday, but the White House says, nothing to worry about here, it's just a routine type thing. I've got the audio of Leavitt talking about Trump's MRIs somewhere on my list here. Number nine.
Cut number nine.
As part of President Trump's comprehensive executive physical, advanced imaging was performed because men in his age group benefit from a thorough evaluation of cardiovascular and abdominal health. The purpose of this imaging is preventative, to identify any issues early, confirm overall health, and ensure the president maintains long-term vitality and function. President Trump's cardiovascular imaging was perfectly normal. No evidence of arterial narrowing impairing blood flow or abnormalities in the heart or major vessels. The heart chambers are normal in size, the vessel walls appear smooth and healthy, and there are no signs of inflammation or clotting. Overall, his cardiovascular system shows excellent health. His abdominal imaging is also perfectly normal. All major organs appear very healthy and well perfused. Everything evaluated is functioning within normal limits with no acute or chronic concerns. In summary, this level of detailed assessment is standard for an executive physical at President Trump's age and confirms that he remains in excellent overall health.
One thing that stood out to me here is, number one, reporters, they have every right to ask about this. People should be concerned about the health of any president. But where were these reporters when Joe Biden was in there bumbling and fumbling around the White House?
Mm. Yeah, I wouldn't be so. By the way, what does well perfused mean?
Let me look.
She said well perfused, and she lost me right there on that one. But anyway.
Well perfused means that an area of the body is receiving an adequate supply of blood, oxygen, and nutrients through good blood flow.
All right. Well, you can get that from like drinking tomato juice, can't you? Which I don't do, by the way. So well perfused. In all seriousness, Ray, what we're talking about here, as Chris said, people do have a right to know. I know it's the president of the United States. I know it's Donald Trump is a private. Well, he's not a private. He has a right to his own health analysis. But when you become president of the United States, your mental and your physical, other things other than mental. Do become an issue of public
concern.
Go ahead.
Well, this comes on the heels of 4 years of Joe Biden, where his decline and truly sad.
Right.
His decline was both sad and obvious, invisible to the point that a year ago they kicked him off the ticket and put Kamala Harris in there. Right. That's how bad.
Yes.
That's how bad he'd become. So I don't blame anybody for. Yeah, look, I don't know if there should be an age limit for the president or not. That's a different kind of debate. But I'll say this, when you've got a man who's 79 years old, if you just take that report at face value, Tim, he must be in the upper 5%,
right?
In the upper 3% or 2% of 79-year-old men to get a health report like that. I was trying to do the math. I am 6 years behind the president. I'm very doubtful that I would get a report as positive as what Donald Trump got. So maybe it's, as some people say, maybe it's his God-given metabolism.
Have you had a full-body MRI?
No, I have not. Okay. I've had in relation to the cancer treatment, I had MRIs, and that's one way that we caught it and started the treatment. No, I've not had what the president has had. He had the, as they say, the executive physical. I want my president to have the executive physical.
Right.
It's remarkable that a man of 79 could be in such good health.
Yeah, and you would expect some decline, right, in certain things.
Yeah.
I mean, 79.
Oh, yeah. So, oh, yeah.
And a half.
And a half.
Oh, yeah.
You start counting halves after 70, right?
Oh, right.
That's right.
Well,
that's right.
Anyway, yeah, President Trump... you know, I think you're right in terms of his physical and mental acuity. He's in the top at least 10% of his age category because
he eats McDonald's.
Yeah, well, he does. He does.
Loves
him some Big
he
Macs
loves him
and
some
fries.
McDonald's and fries. And
I bet
Diet
that cook is real meek though.
It's just funny to me how you hear these stories about people that are super wealthy. And of course, Donald Trump was super wealthy. Before he became president, he was a New York real estate mogul, right?
Right.
And, but it's just funny to me when a man can have filet mignon delivered in front of him anytime he wants, and he's wanting to go. No, take me to the McDonald's drive-thru.
I want a Big Mac.
I want a Big Mac fries.
That's right. Yeah.
I heard Donald Trump Jr. once tell a story. This is back when The Apprentice was big, or it had just it had just ended.
That show?
Yes. And Donald Trump Jr. Told the interviewer that, you know, his dad was really a down-to-earth guy who would much rather just be sitting on the couch with a glass of milk and a cheeseburger than he would be at, like, a formal dinner.
Right.
That's
right.
Been years ago.
Well, you know, it's also, I do want to add this part as a reminder. It is remarkable. I think it's underappreciated what, regardless of what side you're on, how much he travels and how much he speaks and how engaged he is as a president. Now, also, we're coming off the heels of Joe Biden, so you have
Basement Joe.
You have two totally different
situations
as far as comparison goes. So one could look way better than historical, but the point is that it does go to him. It is amazing. It's remarkable what he can do and still have the health that he has.
Well, we'll see if it holds up for three more years, because that's how much he has left in his second term. But I tell you he has a uncanny ability, evidently, to process a lot of information on a daily basis. Well, any president does. Now, I will say this too: a president does have its benefits, in the sense that you got people to do stuff.
A lot of help.
And they're, that you
qualified.
Say jump, they say how high, and that's all day, every day. And then, you have, when you travel, you got first class accommodations. And I'm just saying, there are perks that go with the presidency that make life easier.
Sure, right.
Okay.
To do, make it doable.
Make it doable. Yeah. But at the same time, as I said, you're having to, you're having to be on the phone. You're having to listen to your aides and assistants. You're having to give, directions. People want to know, is this okay to do, Mr. President? So that kind of thing is incoming all the time. So but he does have the ability, at least right now, and hopefully and prayerfully, it'll hold up for three more years, to be able to, be in a position of leadership that people all systems go.
And I pray and hope you're right, but if it doesn't, the other side can't say anything.
You mean because they said zero for
He was fully fit.
Auto pin.
Yeah, auto auto pin. That's what we're gonna go with from now on.
President auto pin.
Just president auto pin, and everyone will know. But they can't say, they lost all credibility.
You're right about that. You're absolutely right about that. The Democrats can't say anything about,
I remember that last year, his last year of his,
Biden?
President Otto Penn, the last year of President Otto Penn, I remember going, we would play his audio, and we'd go, we all know, the reporter knows what's going on, left knows what's going on, which is, to Ray's point now, it was late in the game, but that's why they pulled him.
Right, because, when he did the debate.
The debate, yeah.
The debate in Atlanta that he did against Trump in June of last year, right? Yeah, June of 2024 was when the whole world saw.
Can't believe it was that soon.
The whole world saw what a lot of people knew, and that was Joe Biden was incapable of the faculties needed to be president of the United States. Well,
I forget some of the phrases the mental news reporters faculties would say. They'd say things like, he's fully equipped, he's fully adequate, he's all there, whatever, however they... But
you talk about gaslighting with a capital G.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Good night. All right, but I've never heard a White House give such a 2-minute description of.
Yeah,
I've never heard.
The inside of the blood vessel walls look great, right?
I've never heard
profusion.
Yeah,
abdominal image showed all major organs to be
this
healthy and well,
well
perfused.
Well perfused,
with no acute or chronic concerns to be noted.
I concur.
I mean, you talk about,
we agree.
You talk about any questions?
That's right.
We don't even understand what we just read. So there.
If you say he's well perfused, I'll write in my newspaper.
Right.
Okay. We'll be back momentarily. Jenna Ellis coming up. Stay with us.
It's my turn.
Here is your host for My Turn, Don Wildman.
In the book of Matthew, 6th chapter, there's some words that go like this that our Lord spoke. Therefore, do not be anxious about tomorrow, for tomorrow will be anxious for itself. Let the day's own trouble be sufficient for the day. Abraham Lincoln and some of his friends were once forced to do some traveling during a very rainy season. They'd crossed many small streams, and the water was high and fast in all of them. After a long day of facing streams that nearly washed them away, they came to a lodge where they spent the night. Sitting around the fire that night, the men were talking about how high the streams were and how fast the water was flowing. Then someone brought up the fact that the very next day the group would be forced to cross Fox River. Now, Fox River was very difficult to cross even when the water was low, and if it was up in comparison to the other streams, it'd be nearly impossible to cross. As they sat around and talked, many expressed the thought that Fox River would be uncrossable. Since they had a date to keep, it was important to the traveling group that they not be delayed on their journey. For some time that night, the group sat around discussing the river and the awful possibilities that would be open to them when it came time to cross it. Following some discussion of the river, someone noticed that there was a Methodist preacher spending the night in the lodge who traveled the territory quite often, who was very familiar with Fox River. One of the group asked the preacher about Fox River and how he managed to cope with it when the water was high. "Preacher, you've been listening to us talk about Fox River. Do you have any special way of getting across that river? Any rules to follow that might help us?" a member of the group asked. "Well, now that you ask," replied the preacher, "I do have one fixed rule about the river. I've crossed it many times, and I know it's a mighty problem to get across sometimes, but I've solved the problem with just one rule." "What's your secret, preacher? Have you got a special place to cross?" "Nope, haven't got a special place to cross. I always cross it where everyone else crosses it," he says. "Then you must have a float put back nearby to help you cross it," one of the group stated. "Nope, haven't got a float put back. Just never did have the time to build one for the occasion and didn't have the money to buy one," said the preacher. "But you said you had a rule about crossing that river," one of the Lincoln group blurted out. "If you haven't got a special place to cross or a float to cross on, then tell us what your rule about crossing the river is." "Well, sir," said the preacher, "I've crossed Fox River many times, but I've learned never to cross it till I reach it." And with that, the preacher rolled over and went to sleep. You know, it's a pretty good rule to follow.
This has been My Turn with Don Wildman, a production of the American Family Association.
"This only do I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze on the beauty of the Lord and to seek him in his temple." Psalm 27, verse 4.
American Family Radio.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues. That's the name of this show on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim with Wesley, Chris, and Ray. And joining us now is our friend and colleague and host of Jenna Ellis in the Morning, heard on American Family Radio at 7 o'clock Central Time each weekday morning, Jenna Ellis. Good morning, Jenna.
Good morning. Great to join you guys.
Well, Ray Pritchard, he's about an hour and a half or two from you there. You're in Central Florida, right?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, raised in Central Florida. So he's already told us.
Free state of Florida.
He already told us what the weather is, so we don't. None of us need to hear that.
A second time.
Well, I might as well log off then. Yeah, well, going to give you the weather update.
they call it the Sunshine State for a reason, although there can be a lot of rain.
Yeah,
there can be, and we actually have some rain today, but yeah, we did not have hurricanes at all this year, so it's the first time in 10 years that a hurricane did not make landfall in the United States.
Well, that's awesome.
Right.
Hey, is it the rain there in Florida? You've been there for how long now, Jenna? This is Wesley.
About 3 years.
Okay, 3 years. So does it come and is it all forms of rain, or it just comes in big bunches, or does it spread out real? Or you know
all
what I mean?
All forms of rain.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not sure I understand that.
Oh, all forms, like could it rain for like two or three
days? Wet, right?
That's right. Yeah, right.
Okay.
So does it rain for like multiple? By the way, thank you, Jenna, for pointing that out on live radio. I appreciate
that. Right. Right. Yeah. Well, yes. I wondered myself called, when you said different forms of rain. Yeah. I wondered exactly where you were going with that. I know what you mean. Let me simplify this for you so we can move on.
Yes, okay.
You meant like torrential downpours?
Or
you mean like Seattle misting?
Yes.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there are all forms of rain. Then I can definitely use that now that I have been provided the Webster's Dictionary definition of that.
Yeah.
But Florida is really funny in that a lot of times it will be this torrential downpour for like a solid 15 minutes, and then it's just done. So,
gotcha.
Yeah. So that's what we're kind of
used to. Thank y'all. I thank you.
I don't think
Chris, where were you? I needed you there. Yeah.
I think you made the right decision not going into meteorology school. I think that was a wise choice. Yeah. Yes, Professor.
By the way, you know what? I'm going to correct y'all. Every one of y'all. You can get hail. You can get rain. No, I'm just kidding. I'm trying to make it work here.
Okay.
Those are different forms of precipitation, but not actually rain.
Wesley, there's an old Chinese proverb. It's called
Stop digging.
Yeah. When you're in a hole, stop digging.
All right, moving right along here. All right.
Fair enough.
Jenna, what's on your radar right now as far as the news goes?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot that's going on. I spoke on my show this morning about the Islamification of the West, or Christendom, as my guest very aptly put it. And so that was a long-form conversation today that is really worthwhile, honestly. So definitely go to AFR.net or our free app, and you can always listen to the podcast version, of course, after the fact. But then we also have a few other things going on. Right now, there's a big push from the GOP Congress to pass the SAVE Act. And this is Representative Chip Roy from Texas, mainly his legislation to ensure that only American citizens vote in federal elections. And this seems like a no-brainer. But of course, Democrats actually want non-citizens to vote in U.S. elections. They're the ones that challenged the census, asking that question of whether you are a citizen, which is utterly preposterous when we're talking about using the census in terms of allocation of representative government. And so the SAVE Act is a really big deal. In my opinion, this is a clarifying moment for the GOP, because if they can't do something as very basic as saving the integrity of our elections and ensuring that only citizens vote in federal elections, then they just are telling us very bluntly that they don't want to govern. Because this has passed in the Congress now, which is great. It's over in the Senate. And if the Senate does not use the nuclear option and destroy the filibuster for something that is this important, then they're never going to do it. And we saw that they didn't do it during the government shutdown. They probably are not going to do it on this. But I think that if the GOP just says, well, you know, yeah, we're in the majority, but, you know, hey, this antiquated rule that governs us that we can change at any time, we don't want to exercise that. And, oh, well, we did whatever we could, which was not anything. Then they are just signaling that they want to be in the minority.
Mm. Okay. Well, that's encouraging.
Well, so call your senators and say, you know, the SAVE Act. And that's a big deal. Also, what's going on, I don't know if anybody wants to comment on that, but also two other items that are big in the news right now. The Tennessee 7 election, just in light of how frustrated the overall voting population is with the GOP as a whole. I think people still like President Trump. They're still very happy with his executive orders, his leadership, some of that, but are frustrated with the GOP overall for lack of governing. Tennessee 7, this special election, is between a Republican and what can only be described as probably one of the most crazy people that's ever run for office on the Democrat side. And I don't say that lightly. This is somebody that just has absolutely no business running for office, is literally talking about having, you know, these weird, vivid dreams about, you know, all kinds of different random stuff, like from you know, they're a platform. I mean, she's literally insane. You guys need to go and actually watch clips of this. And the Democrats should not win. This is a district that Trump won in 24 by over 22 points. And so the Republican should get elected. But because of how many people are frustrated and just kind of throwing up their hands, now this seat is potentially in play. And so it would be a huge upset for Democrats. Mm-hmm.
Afton Ben, if I'm saying the last name correctly, is the Democrat here. Afton has been in the news because
that's
she
your
made
first name.
Yes, Afton.
I didn't go there because I didn't have any idea how to pronounce it. I wanted to say Mercedes Benz, but I don't think that's true.
Afton. Afton. Afton made comments a while back on a podcast or something in which she said, "I hate Nashville," and she's running to represent a part of Nashville. So nothing says "vote me in" like "I hate this place." And that's why
and
people are
music.
Referring
she
to
country
yeah,
music.
She hates country music as well. Fox has billed her as the AOC of Tennessee. I'm not sure if that's fair, but
I saw that district there, and I'm familiar somewhat with Tennessee. I would be stunned if she wins. That's a red district, and anyway, we'll see what happens here. But that is a special election. It is tonight. I mean, it is today. So. Make sure if you have friends or family who live in that. What district is it in Tennessee? Does that include Franklin, doesn't it?
I do not know off the top of my head where what the district lines are, but it is Tennessee District 7. So, you know,
It looked to me like it was part of Franklin, and then which is a suburb of Nashville, and then a lot of rural.
Yeah. I'm looking at it right now. The counties are Benton, Cheatham, Davidson, Decatur, Dixon, Hickman, Houston, and Humphreys. And the list goes on.
You always need to watch.
Including Franklin, it says.
You always need to watch out when there's a county named Cheatham in an election cycle.
Again, going back, we got to pass the SAVE Act.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, I want to go back to the SAVE Act for just a minute, please. So
again, what is the SAVE Act?
This is ensuring that only citizens vote in federal elections.
I would have thought that would already be.
You're stealing my thunder.
Go ahead.
So it's safeguard American voter eligibility. All right. So my question would be, again, I'm all for the principle of this, but there's what you know as a destitute law, and there's a lot of them where we have laws on books, but they're not enforced. So what is this going to do? Or can it do any different than what we already have on the books as it relates to? Because when you read off the definition here.
And I have a partial answer to the question, too, after Jenner asked. And then I know Ray's not a potted plant there. He has he wants to participate in the show, too.
Yes, sir.
We'll let you comment. But go ahead, Jenna.
Yeah, so basically what this would be doing is requiring voters to provide documentation of proof of U.S. citizenship when registering for elections. And so, you know, as we all know, we go in and show just your state ID, or, you know, sometimes people, they don't even require showing ID at all. And so it does obviously require that local precincts enforce that, but the act would require voters to provide proof of U.S. citizenship, not just a driver's license or some other form of ID.
Oh, okay.
I would also say this is probably, the thinking probably is, this is to federalize, make a federal law that would cause these blue states to comply
Federally.
You have to be a U.S. citizen to vote, because a lot of these far lefties, they're nuts. They'll say anybody gets to vote, doesn't matter whether they're a citizen or not. You've seen those proposals before. In I saw them in New York and in California. So you might say, well, what do I care whether citizens of San Francisco, you know, are American or not? I don't even live in California. Well, that's fine if we're only a localized election. But when we're talking about making congressional elections, senatorial elections, presidential elections, for example, that affects the whole country.
Yeah.
So, yes, everybody who votes needs to show identification that they are indeed a U.S. citizen. Ray, go ahead.
Jen, I want to ask you about the polls, but it ties into the questions we've been discussing. You said a moment ago, widespread voter dissatisfaction with the GOP, and yet people seem to like President Trump, or at least willing to give him a benefit of the doubt. The problem there, I suppose, is how do you separate the president from his party? And the polls are just snapshots. I realize that. I've been watching Rasmussen, pretty reliable, the daily tracking poll, 47, 46, 45 today. Is the president in danger of losing his mandate with the American people?
I think that's a great question. And I think the danger is that a lot of people are seeing this as the Trump mandate and Congress absolutely failing to view that mandate as their own as well. And the danger, as I see it, I mean, with several members of Congress either resigning before the midterms, like Marjorie Taylor Greene out of Georgia, or threatening to resign, like a few other GOP members, with such a narrow majority in the House of Representatives, wouldn't it be just a classic GOP move to lose their majority without even an election? So that is potentially on the table, and it's just very, you know, demoralizing, I think, to a lot of voters who, after the 2024 election, with how much President Trump won by a landslide, and to Tim's point, all of these elections, even if they are only statewide, they still, or even just district-wide if they're federal, they go to the whole composition as a whole of the majority in the House of Representatives and the Senate. And so we have to have enough of a conservative majority, not just, notice I didn't just say Republican, but a conservative majority who understands the Trump mandate in order to actually codify some of these executive orders, because the president is rightly constitutionally limited. And so I think that there is a sense of demoralization when you look at, and this really started to crop up a lot during the government shutdown, and of course in the aftermath of the wake of Charlie Kirk's assassination, where we saw that really the only thing that the GOP has accomplished at all in terms of codification and legislation was the One Big Beautiful Bill, which didn't even codify any of the DOGE outrageous spending issues. And that's why Elon Musk kind of gave up. So from this perch and this perspective, I think that a lot of people are demoralized, and it's incumbent upon Congress to get it together to do simple things like pass the SAVE Act, pass, you know, a good budget. We still haven't, you know, really done much, and actually move forward on the mandate.
Yeah, I will say this. I think Elon Musk quit because he was ticked at Trump.
About what, though?
I think that was definitely part of it.
No, he was ticked at Trump because Trump's not a fiscal conservative.
Right, yeah.
Trump doesn't care about deficit spending, okay?
Right.
I'm not saying he's alone. Most Republicans don't anymore. You know why? Because most Americans don't want to hear it. I think this is me talking here. So I think what Musk was upset was that Trump, he was looking at all the work he had done, and then he saw Donald Trump, the president, basically going against that with the Big Beautiful Bill in terms
right.
of so who's right and wrong there? I'm not saying necessarily. I'm just saying that I think that's what the contention was, if you ask Elon Musk. Well, you know, to be fair to Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, he's dealing with four or five or six. What is it? Vote majority.
Oh, it's very small.
Like, it's very small.
Less than 10.
Once Marjorie Taylor Greene leaves, I mean, it's going
to
be
down to four
a handful.
Something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's 3 or 4.
Yeah.
But at the same time, though, and with all due respect to Mike Johnson, he's been a personal friend of mine for a long time. So, I mean, I know him well. I think he has a very sincere personal relationship with the Lord. He's a Christian, you know, all of those things. His leadership, in my opinion, has been, as I've described it on my show and a couple of different interviews, as more of a life coach, counselor to people in Congress, as he even described it himself on a recent interview that he did with his wife, Kelly, on a podcast, than actually having firm leadership and whipping votes and saying that we've all got to come together for some of these priorities. So it seems to me that he's trying to be a little bit too much of a behind the scenes player and kind of a, you know, let's everybody get along and, you know, what are your needs and sort of this coexist bumper sticker kind of view, instead of taking more of a firm handed approach, which when you have that small of a majority, you may need.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, Jenna, so your podcast is up now?
So my weekly podcast comes out every Friday. So yeah. We will be recording that soon. So stay tuned for that. But that's on demand. You can find past episodes, which are still very timely, worth listening to at AFR.net or via our free app. And then also tomorrow, we're going to have a member of Congress on talking more about the SAVE Act and a few other things. And we're also in talks as well with getting Governor DeSantis back on as well, because Florida is in the midst of some redistricting proposals in light of, you know, all of the election mess in terms of let's protect our elections, but let's also make sure that with this new census and some other things, that districts are actually apportioned correctly. And if all of that goes through, Florida may end up getting 5 or 6 seats. So
I wonder if
that's a big deal as well.
By the way, who knows what the future holds for Governor Ron DeSantis, because his term as governor ends what?
January of 2027.
Jenna just had a conversation about this with Chris Salcedo.
Yeah.
What
do you think the future holds for Governor DeSantis as far as politics?
Well, you know, he was actually on CNN and answered the question of whether he was going to run again for president. And he basically said it's too early at this point, which I think is very wise. You know, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, he truly is a public servant. I don't think that he runs with the intention of just furthering his own political career. He's not a career politician. He's a lawyer. He was a JAG officer in Congress, you know, and then a governor. And so if he doesn't see a pathway, he won't run. So what he will do if he doesn't end up running for president remains to be seen. But I think he's taking a very calculated approach. He's wanting to focus right now on the last year that he has as governor and leave Florida in the absolute best shape that he can to hand off to whoever is the next governor. And whether or not he participates in the primary in Florida also remains to be seen. And that's the most interesting question from my perspective as a Floridian.
All right, Jenna, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, bye-bye. That's Jenna Ellis joining us. Ray, any thoughts on what Jenna was sharing there?
Yeah, I want to just say this about Jenna as a person. She's the real deal, friends, the absolute real deal. You ought to listen to the program in the morning. Or check out the podcast. You know, Tim, every time we interview her, I just think she is so well-spoken on the issues of the day. And, I also agree with her about Ron DeSantis. Tim, they love him in Florida with very good reason, because the state is doing well. No state income tax. He's even said he'd like to do away with property tax here in Florida.
Yeah, that's a big one. I think I would not be shocked if we don't start seeing and hearing people say Vance DeSantis. And the reason they're going to try to sell this as a ticket in 2028 is it would lock up Ohio and Florida, the two states they always need to win. A Republican always needs to win to get the White House.
Yeah. Ron DeSantis, I think, is the best conservative governor I can remember. There may have been some that were as good.
There may have been some as good ideologically, but actually doing it.
Yeah. Well, and two, I mean, he's
and articulating.
Florida's a huge state, right?
Yeah. That's
it's
true.
One thing to be a governor of Wyoming. Now, I'm not putting that.
Right, I know.
But it's practically a country.
Well,
that's right.
Florida wasn't always red. Florida was purple before Ron DeSantis came along. And he's a two-term, widely popular governor.
Deep red now.
Yeah, deep red. It's Florida's a red state now.
Yes. In the 2022 midterms, Florida was the one place that had a lot of Republican gains, and it even got Brett Baer's attention, because Brett said on Fox News that evening, Florida looks more like Arkansas tonight than it did prior to this election starting.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I do think there's a future somewhere for Ron DeSantis, whether it would be, you know, I think J.D. Vance, the current vice president, would be the nominee for the Republicans if were today, because he is the heir apparent, and that's the way the system works. But I could definitely see Ron DeSantis, you know, having served two terms as governor of Florida, being on the ticket with Vance, for example, like you're suggesting, Chris. Or in a cabinet position,
yeah.
Secretary of Defense or Secretary of whatever.
He was in the Navy.
Of the state. Anyway, I do think we'll be hearing from Ron DeSantis again after he leaves the governor's mansion in Tallahassee. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. What's your next story, Chris?
Well, I posted this on our Today's Issues Facebook page so people can go there and get the information from themselves. But there is a new report out from the National Taxpayers Union Foundation. It's the usual thing that you see at the end of a year that shows you where Americans are moving to and where they're moving from. And the National Taxpayers Union Foundation says Florida, Texas, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Tennessee are gaining people by the minute. No joke.
By the minute,
by
Chris?
By the minute, yes. No surprise here. California, New York, Illinois, Massachusetts, and New Jersey are losing people, due in part to government policies.
So the Jed Clampett scenario isn't happening anymore.
No. Also, I want to know
Jed
what kind
Clampett,
of ammo
you know, Jed Clampett,
he
moved from a red state to a blue state.
He sure did. Yeah. He sure did. And he made it better.
Of course, at that time, California wasn't a blue state. It was a red state.
Yeah.
Very
remember
true.
This?
Yes.
Yeah. And the cement ponds and all that.
I just want to know, I've always wanted to know, what kind of ammo was he using to strike oil?
You talking about Jed?
Yes. Right. Because he was shooting at an animal and he missed, and that's how he struck oil. Like, what are you shooting with?
First you know, thing you know, old Jed's
a millionaire.
Yeah.
You know, Chris, when I'm watching TV or a movie and I ask a question like you asked, which is very reasonable, that's when I get jabbed in the ribs.
It's just
by my wife. She says, would you shut up? It's a TV show. It's a movie.
The professor couldn't – he could make a radio out of a coconut, but he couldn't fix a hole in the boat.
I know. Such a problem.
Yeah, you don't – Yeah.
You just jumped from the Beverly Hillbillies to Gilligan's Island.
I know.
Don't get
if
me started
50,
on Mike Brady.
You have no idea
the man was
what
an architect and he
about.
Couldn't have an add-on in the house. The kids had to share rooms.
Two classics. Well, what were we talking about before we got off?
People moving.
People moving.
I'm sorry. It was my fault.
Go ahead, Wesley.
Yeah, we've been seeing this over the last 10 years, and we saw it a lot following the COVID lockdowns and the restrictions that were taking place in California and New York and some of these other
blue states.
We were seeing that, and so you saw a lot there. Then you saw a lot in the next wave of the public education and how they were abusing their ability to teach and stuff. Go ahead.
Florida welcomes somebody new every 2 minutes and 9 seconds, followed by Texas at roughly every 2 minutes and 53 seconds.
I want to know how many people is it a half a person per second then?
That's a good question, Wesley.
Math is why I have a BA in communication. Don't ask me
half
things
a
about
person.
Math. Yes,
I do think also the in addition to I think the business friendly environments of
family friendly
of the red states and family friendly environments and more freedom.
Yeah,
than the blue states are going more. Government control of everything, high taxation, high regulation. I mean, these are where the secular progressives, they rule the day. And in these blue states.
They're involved in every part of your life.
Yeah, and a lot of people are saying, you know, I don't want to live under this.
That's right, yeah.
So I'm going to move to a red state. Which, so the bottom line is the red states are gaining.
It's a growing trend.
That are leaving the blue states.
There was a big wave of conservative influencers that left California and moved to Tennessee, Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, Nashville's just going crazy as far as its growth goes from people moving from California.
And Texas.
Yeah. Texas, you know, the Dallas-Fort Worth area continues to go crazy.
Houston's one of the biggest cities in the
country. A lot of them are from California moving out. All right, we will be back with more of today's issues with Steve Paisley Jordahl kind of coming up in 5 minutes.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.